Hi, welcome to the Pony Sync for the March 7th, 2019. I'm your host, Andy. Can everybody just go around and say your name?
I'm Sean. I don't know the difference between a wizard and a sorcerer.
I'm Joe, and I do.
I'm Carl. I'm
just getting confused.
I'm Gordon.
I'm Shed. I'm not planning to speak so much.
Actually, Paul's here too. He's sitting in my office.
Hey, Paul.
Hey. Hey, Paul. Welcome.
Okay.
So, the zeroth order of business is to discuss this, what LLVM do we support question. So, Sean, you brought that up. I will let you think over there.
Yes. So we had previously stated that in general we would support the latest point release of the last three LLVM versions. And I wanted to discuss a couple problems with that, because we've also said that we would support LTS versions of popular Linux distros, in particular Ubuntu, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, CentOS, and Debian. And when I went to deprecate LLVM 3.9.1 the other day, it turns out that these two things are in conflict. Whoever that is, can you mute yourself, please? Andy, can you mute Chad? There we go. All right. Awesome. Okay. So, so, for example, if we take Ubuntu Xenial, which is an LTS release, which is supported for still a while now, by default for in the repositories which are available to Xenial, LLVM 3.9 and 4 are available, but there is no LLVM 5, 6, or 7, which makes it somewhat difficult for us to do build and do packaging for these. We would start to be our release support stuff, if we have to support across like different Ubuntus and everything, a wide variety of ones, with setting up stuff is a pain in the ass for setting up the repos for when we're building, et cetera, and everything. Because then we also have to have different spec files for each of the individual versions. It can be kind of a pain in the ass. At the moment, every single one of our Ubuntu ones, for example, is built with 3.9.1. It's the lowest one that works across the Ubuntus that we support, Xenial and Bionic, right? And that works just fine. In addition, we took on saying we're supporting Alpine. Alpine does their own versions of LLVM and definitely does not upgrade as often. There is a LLVM 3.9.1 package available for Alpine, and there's an LLVM 5, and there's nothing else. So if we were going to follow what we had said, then when LLVM 8 comes out, in theory, we would have to drop Alpine support, because we don't support LLVM 5. So,
but I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
For example, for 1604, i.e. Xenial.
Yes.
There is an LLVM 7 install, but it has to be done through the LLVM. Right.
Yes.
That seems like an okay thing, but that doesn't solve the problem.
It's an okay thing, except that it makes our build process more difficult, as we're going to have different spec files. What we have right now is we have a spec file for Ubuntu. In fact, all Debian things in general. Right, and it's like, hey, 3.9 is available on all of these, and so we support that. This will probably be a problem at some point in the future in general, but even if we can do it in that Ubuntu case, if we take like the Alpine one, right? Like, it's like, okay, well, what happens when if there's only Alpine 5? They only have LVM 5. I think it makes sense to say that we will support whatever the system version is that you can install on the basically the LTS type releases, if such a thing exists, for the distributions that we've decided to support. So in this particular case, I think Xenial is end of life in I think it's like end of July this year, right? At which point, well, I'd have to check to see what's up with the CentOS's in our enterprise, you know, that we're looking at. We do like CentOS 7 and what that is. But it's possible at that point that we drop like LLVM 3.9.1 support at that point. But we keep it around until then. And so, that would be the general thing.
Right. So just referencing, Rust has this problem too. And they basically every 6 months go through a process of deciding what LLVM they're going to deprecate and where they are. And so there's an issue on rustlang/rust. It's issue 55842, if anyone's interested, which was the last time they did this, which was in November. And they deprecated everything before 6.
They also have vendored all of their stuff and build LLVM. And basically, LLVM gets built on each machine.
Yeah.
Which and we're talking about, we have binary ones where right now we use the system.
Totally, yeah, totally understand. But there's this tension, right, between supporting distros and getting the most recent versions, I almost said version, but the set of versions of LLVM that we actually want to support. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying that one of the approaches is to do as Rust does and say, look, it's more important to move the compiler back and forward because there are just so many distros you end up supporting, which is very much the line they've taken. Don't get me wrong. Every single time they go through this, there's significant discussion. So I don't want to say it's a solvable thing.
Right. So this is my take on it, right, Sylvan? I'm approaching it from the other angle, which was the last point I was going to make, which is, I think we look at this from, it's not we're deprecating 3.9.1, right? It's here are the distros that we've decided to support, and because of that, we should support these things. And so, like, if we just and it would become an issue of, do we drop Xenial support now if we want to drop 3.9.1, for example? Do we drop Xenial early and just say we're not going to build packages for Xenial anymore? If you want to use Xenial, Bionic is out. If you want to use Xenial, you need to build from source.
I think that's a reasonable point of view. My bias is very much towards I want to move to newer LLVM versions basically as fast as is reasonable.
Well, what does it mean to move to an LLVM version?
To stop having the compiler support the older versions such that if we want to do things in a different way, we only have to cover a more set of LLVM versions.
Gotcha.
So, in the Pony packages that we distribute, can we not use the vendored LLVM that is recent? And then if you want to build from source, you can either use your system one, but it has to be recent, or you build the vendored one. It takes ages, but you decide to do it on old machines, so.
And then we're statically linked against LLVM, and that's fine.
I can't answer that question, right? Because, for example, I would have to investigate, and I don't know or how to go about investigating. For example, with are all of our Fedora, et cetera, type things like CentOS packages are built using Kopra. Does Kopra have a timeout on how long they would take to build? How long would it take to build a vendored LLVM in that scenario? Like the Debian ones and the Ubuntu ones, we Dipin took it on himself to set it up so that we run in Travis, right? So there's a limit right now for the amount of time that it would take for the Travis stuff in order to build all of this, precisely because the launch pad of stuff that Canonical provides for building for these things, you can only ever have the latest version, which meant that you know, it'd be like, hey, if somebody out there, like, I don't know, say Wallaroo Labs is depending on an earlier version of Pony C to be able to be installed by folks, right? Nobody would be able to install on an Ubuntu one other than just the absolute latest one. So we do the Debian building right there, right? So that would be a, we could do that particular one, but I know for a fact that we would have to no longer be doing that part of a release process using Travis because it's going to time out.
Right.
So that is something we could certainly look into, though. I figured somebody would bring that up as an option.
There's also, if we're talking about statically linking LLVM as our main form of distribution, there is I think there's a use case for doing things like using the runtime bitcode, for example, feature that we have, where you would require, I believe, the same LLVM toolchain later down the road to link against your program. And that wouldn't be present. So if we do statically link against LLVM, we just need to make sure, I think, we retain the LLVM toolchain binaries that are relevant in the package.
So you mean the compiler would have to be built with the same thing we link to?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's using the bitcode stuff right now, but having a thing which makes it so that that's still possible for people who install via binary package seems like a good idea if it's not too much of a drawback. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting.
Do we know how many people are using each of the different distros and downloading the packages?
Not really. There's no stats for like Kopra, for example. Go in and look at the stats for the we host the Debian related ones and the Ubuntu ones in our bin tray, so we have stats for that. We have no stats for Homebrew, right? Which is LLVM 7 at this point, and that's a different, easier one. And we should probably have, we'd have stats for the Windows stuff, but for the Alpine packages, or you know, the Alpine stuff for being able to build with that, no, we don't have anything. Actually, we don't build Alpine packages. We just have it so that we can work with LLVM 5.
Right.
Which this would come up anyway for a thing is, we cannot use the vendored LLVM on as a solution on Alpine because they make changes to LLVM in order to get it to work with Muscle C. At some point, like if they don't update from LLVM 5, like before LLVM 8 comes out, you know, we have to make some kind of decision at some point. Do we keep continuing to support LLVM 5 so that we can support Alpine or not? Which is, you know,
I'll say I'm personally very much in favor of continuing support for Alpine because it's a way to build static binaries.
I'm really in favor of continuing to support Alpine for that reason. Yes.
Yeah.
I think, so what about this is right now we could do it based on for the simple rule for stuff right now is it's based on the system LLVM that's there, it's available, and we could start looking into being able to drop the system LLVM for stuff that's not like basically like Alpine, for the stuff that we're doing packages and look at using vendored LLVM for packages, which would probably make our life easier in a lot of ways with those packages. But that's something that could happen over time. And in the meantime, I would reinstate the LLVM 3.9 CI task, and that we would build our releases through when Xenial right now is dropped using LLVM 3.9.1 until we explore the vendored LLVM, at which point we could discuss it again. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yay, I get to undo all of the LLVM 3.9.1 killing that I did. Woohoo, I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, man. I want to vote differently this time.
No, it's fine. It's the right thing to do, because otherwise I have to figure out how to fix our release process to do something entirely different. And honestly, that's a lot more work.
Okay.
One more thing related to this, right? This is specific to Debian. I want to clarify something we previously said for Debian distributions that we would support. I didn't realize that LTS for Ubuntu and Debian meant different things, and I don't know if anybody else did either. LTS for Ubuntu is, this is supported by Canonical and Canonical's team through this period of time. LTS for Debian means something different. LTS stuff for Debian is no longer supported by the Debian team, but there's like a party of interested people who continue to support LTS stuff. But that particular thing has been end of life already by the Debian team. An example of this right now would be is that Debian Jesse is still under LTS support, but it was actually officially end of life in June 2018 by the Debian folks. I would like to say that our default right now for any Debian thing is that when it's end of life by the Debian folks, that we can drop support for it. So for example, this would mean we drop support for Jesse right now, which was end of life by the Debian folks on June 6, 2018.
Yeah, that seems very reasonable.
Cool. All right, now I have something to do with my Saturday, other than going to see Tank Girl.
Is end of life when it gets out of stable or when it gets out of old stable?
End of life for Debian means that they will provide, that the Debian security team will provide no further security updates, etc., for any packages. That makes sense?
Yeah.
And then there is LTS, which is third-party people who will continue to provide security update packages for that, but it's not actually the Debian project that's doing it anymore. Oh, one more thing on this. I don't think we should build packages for any Ubuntu things which are not LTSs. Like, whenever we picked what packages to build, we picked Ubuntu Artful, for example, which was not an LTS. I think we should just drop. We should drop it now. It's right, and it's actually already been end of life. So we should drop it. Period. But we shouldn't bother setting up builds for anything that aren't LTS ones anyway. If somebody wants to use a non-LTS Ubuntu, they could build from source.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. I got everything I need. Thanks.
Okay. Moving on to pull requests for RFCs. We have three new RFCs in the last week.
Three? So,
yeah. 145, which is the proposal to add a hard close method to TCP connection.
Did I already upvote this? I already upvoted this.
Okay. So I think you've got a thumbs up on it.
Mm-hmm. Shall I explain the RFC?
Go ahead.
I kind of folks, because I helped Jonathan with this problem. There is no way from inside the existing TCP connection when you're in the notify to hard close the connection. What Jonathan figured out was that, hey, if you mute the connection, right, then when you call close on it, it will do a hard close. And when we were talking about that, I was like, that seems like really backwards for you have a scenario where you just want to close the damp socket, right? So there should be a public hard close that you can call from inside your notify in order to close the socket rather than going through graceful if you want to. And that's what this RFC does. It would add a public hard close method that would call the existing private hard close so that you could hard close from inside a notify.
I think why did they call the existing private instead of making the existing method public?
Hmm?
Why not just make the existing method public instead?
It seems to be our general pattern that we've followed with those things in there, whether intentional or not, when one of these things is called from more than one place, like hard close, to make it private. And then call it from there. Like we do that sort of thing elsewhere. I don't think it really matters. If we could rename it and then the few places that call hard close as it is, I don't think it makes a difference. That seems like a perfectly reasonable approach as well.
Okay. I added that comment to the RFC.
I have a question. For which I'm sure there will be a very interesting answer. How did you discover you needed a hard close?
Wait, what?
Well, generally speaking, normal close should be fine, but I can't imagine situations where a hard close is necessary. And I was just curious if you had a specific story of, oops, we totally needed a hard close. If not, no worries.
I am not the person who is looking for the hard close, so I can't answer that.
That's fine. I don't think
there's motivation in the RFC related to muting, right?
Well, he did the muting so he could get the hard close.
Got it.
Yeah.
But it certainly seems like a reasonable thing to allow.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so you added a comment, and basically, if we change it to that, then it'd be, I think, are we all in favor if with that little change of Joe's?
I am.
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Okay, so. Proposal to. Okay, so I'm going to put that as a comment on it. I'm going to change it to a final comment period for that, right? So we could get, for folks who are not here, we could hear their stuff on it, and then we could revisit it in I would say the week after next, just because there's only a couple days between now and the next sync. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, 144, proposal to access environment variables and values via a map.
I think this one could take the rest of our time.
It can. So let's start with something that I think everybody should know, which is that originally map was in built-in and vars gave an access via a map.
I did not know that. Doo-doo-doo. Wow, it's not often I learn a pony history thing that I didn't already know.
Yes. So it turns out that for a significant number of short-running programs, building said map dominated the cost of execution. That's not going to change, right?
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And part of that has to do with size of the environment that occurs under on some systems. It also means that the size of your environment can start to really dominate the cost of your program running, and you can get into situations like, oh, well, gosh, if I just take a few things out of my environment, my program runs faster, and that's not what we want.
I have a solution to that, Sylvan.
Excellent.
I have a solution. You're probably not going to like it, or you might.
One of the things that happens right now in Env, or to be fair, I haven't looked recently, so I hope it still happens, is that actually even that array used to, at least for a while, was lazily built. Is that still the case?
That was what I was going to go for, was why don't we lazily build this thing? I have no idea if that array is lazily built. Let's go look.
Let's go to the code. Array built in. No, sorry. Where's Env now?
Strings from pointers happens automatically. And strings from pointers, yeah, it doesn't seem to be lazy.
Yeah, no, that's not lazy. Ain't nothing
lazy. So you can save the pointers and build a map lazily?
In my opinion, that's a significant performance regression.
And while we're looking at it, the same thing I think applies to args, but less important.
So you'll see that there's a count strings on envp, strings from pointers. Yeah, so both args and vars, gosh, I don't know when this happened. I apologize. I've apparently lost track of a thing on here. Let me find some history.
I hope your name is on it.
Oh yeah, it's almost done.
Because that would just, that's always classic.
Yeah, it's almost inevitable.
Who's the fucking idiot who, oh, hey. I knew it was me.
Language.
Oops, sorry. Yes. I'm a horrible New Yorker.
So, I don't know, I'm sorry. I'm looking at blame in history, and I don't see anything immediately.
I see a commit from Sylvan that says, "Don't pre-calculate the envir strings."
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Which, yeah, it this is what made it lazy. And I don't know what made it unlazy, but this is the original commit that made it lazy.
There was simplify artificial envp, at which point envp was still a core part of this, because there was an envp that was a member of the type. So it must be after that.
So at least by the, it was already not lazy by the time you did the 32-bit ARM port in 2005, Sylvan.
Let's have a quick look. Let's go to the video.
So it had to be somewhere.
That wasn't five. That was a while ago.
We're talking about something. It was either you or Andy. It looks like, not you, Andy. Oh. Other Andy.
So that's the I clicked on a commit that is too big for GitHub. So actually, if you take a look at the commit after that, simplify artificial envp.
Uh huh.
You'll see that envp is still a class member, and it is still a pointer U8.
Okay.
So it's not there.
Oh, it's going to be Theo's add style guide. Nope, okay, it's still a pointer when Theo added the style guide. Damn, that would have been awesome. Oh, I know where it's going to be.
the more customization of artificial environments.
Nope, it's not there. Add more.
It's Benoit's commit. Allow more customization of artificial environments. So this is, creating an environment from an array of and vars, which it's unclear to me how you would do that. How you would get to pointer from that, like if you're trying to create an artificial env, it's not clear to me how you would create a pointer ref for that.
We can make it a union and then
yeah.
Artificial you already have as you build it lazily.
The other question I was going to ask is it possible that like so rather than making this a map, if env the class provided like get environment variable method, like get env or something. Then we can just iterate over the array and say, okay, well, we're lazily accessing the map as not a real map, but so the search time is longer, but maybe you don't have as many environment variables and maybe you only grab them once and that's fine. Like no reason to pre-hash everything, just right. Like grab the environment variables you need and deal with the long search time for them.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable actually. And then if you want to build an app for quick access, you do exactly that.
Yeah.
Because I really don't want to stick map back in built-in. It wasn't nice.
Why?
Yeah, the CLI package has a little map builder.
That seems like that seems so busted and broken to me.
What?
Go use the CLI packages thing to.
I don't think that's it at all. I think with if we provide an iterator over that, it's a custom iterator that is just,
What's the objection to map being part of built-in?
There are a bunch of things that got moved around to accommodate that. It gets kind of filthy, and it means that we're blowing up built-in quite a bit. The idea of built-in was to cover just the things that required compiler support. Now, it doesn't really work that way. There are some things in there that don't require compiler support, but they are the things that roughly speaking, are required to make the program start. And introducing a bunch more stuff into there, it's not great. It also means we're saying, okay, this is the map implementation that you use to represent environment variables, and I don't think that's right either. I think there are many useful map implementations. For example, I might want to populate a champ with that so that I can trivially share it and make changes and things like that. And I think saying, going a little bit more down Joe's route, of saying, hey, environment variables really are pairs of strings that are held in a single string, right? But we know how to parse them. And if we say, oh, we've got an iterator that will absolutely hand you back pairs of strings because it iterates through this pointer and pulls them out, you can even attach a filter to it and use it in a sort of a straightforward way using iter tools or something like that and build whatever map you want out of that. That might be significantly smaller. That might be a different kind of map.
Okay. I don't think that was really why not map in there. You sort of went off into something else, but you have convinced me. If you want to, you can keep going to convince other listeners who might not be here right now, yes. But you got me.
Going back to mapping stuff, it means that a bunch of things that map also depends on then get also get built moved into built-in. So things like hashing and hashing functions. And it means that a bunch of code becomes non-replaceable. And that's the problem. It also is very annoying when you do things like build a persistent map and you want to call it map in the persistent package and you can't anymore because map is taken by the built-in package, which is pollutes the namespace. But that's just me being persnickety, I suspect.
I think that's a great point, actually. I will add that to the ticket, the RFC. I'm going to try to capture some of these thoughts there.
Okay.
I'm convinced.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think in addition to providing the iterator, I think just adding a simple method you can use to get a specific environment variable by name would be a nice touch and not cause trouble.
I think that's wise. Mm-hmm. I think that's very wise.
I'm so happy Jonathan followed through and opened this, right? He was like, he found the thing in the CLI package, right? And was like, oh, I guess I could not open that RFC. I could just use that. And I was like, no, please open this because I think it will lead to an interesting discussion. Please do open the RFC.
I would also like to say thank you to Jonathan. This is exactly the kind of stuff that I love to see being opened up so that people really talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, even if there is a way to do it, if you're like, that way doesn't feel quite right, then yes, please, like anybody who's listening, open RFCs for that. It might not be the thing that you propose that happens, but we'll certainly,
we're definitely going to make changes because of this RFC, so I think that's a big win.
Yes.
And you can learn a little bit of pony history.
Oh my God, I learned pony history. Yeah. Gonna have to go back and modify that pony history blog post now, Sylvan.
To be fair, I'm not sure that was ever in built-in after when it was public. It may have been only before it was public. So
what type does NVARS end up being after if we make these changes?
I would like to go back to having the NVP, but I don't want to mess up Benoit's change, but it would be nice if we could do it in a way that did not prefetch the environment.
Yeah, we can use the union type like Paul suggested.
Mm-hmm.
That Paul, he's a smart bleep, bleep, bleep. How was that, Sylvan?
That was really good.
Say okay. Smart cookie. Cookie's good.
Cookie is good. Nice. That's way better than bleep, bleep, bleep.
I don't know. Bleep, bleep, bleep sounds strong and powerful, but cookies are things you eat and they crumble.
But they're delicious.
Sean, why you got to hate on cookies?
I love cookies. I'm just saying I don't feel like it's a compliment to call somebody a cookie.
It sounds like hating
context
on cookies.
Is everything.
I love cucumbers, but I don't feel like it would be a compliment to call somebody a cucumber.
How are you wrong twice in 1 minute?
Apparently involving all words that begin with the letter C.
Maybe a start. Okay.
Carrot.
Yay, fruitful discussion on this.
Who's capturing comments on this? Joe?
Yes,
oh, cool. All right.
Did you just do a... anyway, okay.
It sounded like a Mario voice.
That's it did. It sounded a lot like it. All right.
But don't say that like it's a bad thing.
We have about 10 minutes before we should
let's get this async await RFC.
I apologize, but for a little context on the async await RFC.
And this is 143, by the way, for people who are following along at home.
Yep. This is something I've been talking to people about a bit. I had a good conversation with John about it. John Mum, sorry, for the listeners. He proposed a possible semantics, and he also proposed the possible problems with it. And I discussed it with some other people, and the core problem with his possible semantics is really, really nice for the programmer, but it would lead to persistent deadlocks, and it seems like that's a bad trade-off. This is something I'm still interested in. It's not that we should in any way punt, but this is a significantly more complicated issue than I think perhaps the RFC author has quite latched onto yet. Don't get me wrong, this is something I'm interested in, but this is a pretty serious language design issue, and it does involve if we were to go down this route, it would involve a pretty serious rewrite to the compiler. I would estimate something like 25% of the compiler code would have to change, because this is about essentially generating a CPS transform. Probably in order to be useful, it would also require a fairly significant change to the type system. Not that those are necessarily wrong things, but this is not a small issue.
I feel like at least for the use cases, I understand it from what he was looking for, right? Is he was really thinking about this as sugar over a use case, which is not all asynchronous things, but doing using promises as a fork join tool, right? And for that, I think that can be accomplished in a library without having to touch the compiler at all, because that is fairly straightforward. If you have the very constrained case of, hey, here's a computation or a set of computations that I want to fork out over a number of things, they can be run inside of a promise directly, right? Which will then return results back to some sort of thing which accumulates the results and does something with them. That's certainly a pattern which could be could even be incorporated into promises as part of the promises packages itself.
Yep, that seems reasonable. Yeah.
There could be other use cases beyond that, but certainly when he came in and first raised it in the Slack, that was specifically the use case that he was talking about. My reading of the RFC, as I made a comment on that, is that I believe that is the specific use case that's here, although there would need to be some clarification on that.
Yeah.
And I think the problems really that you're speaking to, Sylvan, start to arise when you get outside of that use case.
Yep, yeah, it feels to me like this is not truly like the async await that we all think of when we hear those terms. It's like sugar over promises, and I feel like that it may be confusing to some people to come across this and not catch that point. So it's probably important to state.
Okay.
Would there be any utility to maybe proposing that we call this something else? I mean. If we stick very specifically to the use case that he's talking about,
I think it's some sort of fork join thing in the promises library.
Okay.
Because from my reading of it and from my talking to him in Slack, his specific thing that he was having a hard time with that he thought could be much better was a fork join case, and he's not the first person to come in who's wanted to use promises to do fork join, who's made similar comments about how this is a pain in the ass. And I agree, setting up the current promises interface to do fork join is a pain in the ass, right? Like, and it's something that there could be an abstraction over for doing the basic fork join mechanics and everything, where you provide like the computations, the accumulation, and boom.
Okay.
That would be much easier.
So that wouldn't require an RFC to add something like that to the library, correct?
Well,
it would, right? For changing a library.
But somebody could create this as a library that's outside of the standard library. They could work out like kinks and everything in it there, and then propose it to be as an RFC to be added to the standard library. And I think that once something that like that got some use, and we knew that it was fairly like good and stable and useful to a number of people, then including it with the promises in the standard library would make a lot of sense, because I think a lot of people would want to use it.
Would anybody be interested in mentoring somebody to do this, or helping guide somebody along to do this?
I could do that.
I mean, is that I'm just asking. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to like say we should do that. But if you're willing to do that, and if he's got this problem that he's trying to solve, maybe this is a good time to just say, okay, let's do this.
I would be willing to help try things out, because I kind of ran into the similar problem when I was writing my tool that spawned off lots of sub child processes, how to gather the results and chain things together. And I started with promises, and then I just sort of copied their idioms but didn't use them directly because they didn't seem to help.
Yeah. I guess just one way or the other, you know, if it's something where we've gotten a number of people kind of asking the same question, this is seems like a good time to.
I'm not
sure how to tackle it. Or not. You dealt with him in Slack.
I think in a lot of ways this is something that comes up for folks because folks are coming in and they don't really, they're looking at, they think actors and they think basically like fork join type parallelization is a thing that actors would be great for. And it could be, I mean, for that. And we don't have any pony pattern or anything else that shows people what the possible ways to do this are, because there's more than one way to do this.
Yeah.
Right. And that might be, that might be more potentially valuable than, you know, like if somebody wants to build like a fork join thing, that would be great. There's more than one way to actually do it. Right. And perhaps information on how you go about approaching these things might be better in the long term. I don't really know as compared to.
Yeah. I feel like you're right, because I think people, when they come to the language, a lot of them are familiar with something akin to the CPS transformation that Sylvan mentioned. Right. And they're looking for something like that because they have a problem that they're used to solving that way and it's familiar to them. And I think what we need is some pony idiomatic references about how to approach these problems in a different way that doesn't have some of those issues.
I agree. That would be great.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm still learning.
Maybe something in the patterns book then?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've solved this problem a number of occasions. I've never personally used the promises library for it because, well, it's just not how my brain works for solving it. So yeah, I mean, there's more than one way to do it.
Sure. Yeah. I'm just thinking if there's the grain of a good idea here, and if we all agree that async await properly done is more complicated than what's listed here, but if there's something useful to get out of this RFC, then I'd like to.
Anybody who wants to do any approach towards putting together a fork join thing, right? If they come by the Slack and I'm there, I will help them work through through it. Yeah. Like, and if anybody starts writing some pony pattern stuff, I can help with reviewing, et cetera, and everything else. And that I have a few other things on my plate right now that would preclude me starting on any of those things in the immediate future. Like, you know, the release stuff, et cetera.
Would you be able to maybe just write something in Slack and possibly in Twitter just to that effect and maybe see if we could draw anybody in?
I don't know. To what effect?
Oh, sorry. To the effect of anybody who's interested in this particular problem.
Yes.
Behind the corner at Slack at midnight.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Cool.
Thank you.
I can do that.
Okay. So it looks like we're basically at time so that we can release this account so that the other folks can use it. So I guess, yeah, we'll get to other things next week, which I guess is only a few days away now. So thank you everybody for showing up. And we'll talk later.